Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
It's my absolute pleasure to bring in a great friend, Noah Eagle, who has been on your television doing everything all summer. The next time he'll be on your television is Friday night in Brazil on Peacock, where he will call Packers Eagles one of 3 games that your family of networks has this weekend. Noah Eagle, how are you, man? You must be tired.
Definitely a little tired, but pushing through. You know, nobody. What's the great quote from Michael Keaton and the other guys? I don't want no scrubs. Yeah, or that was TLC. You know,
that was TLC.
Waterfalls. You know, also TLC. He didn't recognize that, but yeah, we just push through, man. You know how this is. You know how we're wired and excited to get another awesome assignment. That's really what the big thing is here. So 3 NFL games, including then the college football Saturday on top of that. I mean, it is going to be a special week of football, not just on NBC, but all around the country.
No doubt about it. You guys have the Thursday night opener as well, and of course, Sunday night football as scheduled. We'll get back to the football in a second, but I'm just so curious because, you know, we were over there in France. We tried to get together in Paris. Our schedules didn't align because you were quite busy calling men's and women's basketball.
Yeah.
And, I'm just curious, like, what it was like for you. We haven't actually caught up. So this is a real conversation between friends that's happening into microphones that people get to hear. But, like, the experience of calling it, especially the men's with Dwayne, someone that I'm sure we're close enough in age that we both grew up watching, including in the Olympics and being arguably the best player on that 08 team in terms of performance. What was it like to go through that process with him? And especially, I think the thing that I'm interested in, Noah, is he was so outwardly grateful to you for being his partner in that experience. Like on Instagram, he's like, thank God I had Noah to teach me the ropes. So like, what is that like to go through it and then to take a step back after and be like, wow, look at what we just did?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's completely different when you're in the moment and then after the fact when you can actually embrace and analyze everything that went down. But to start on the Dwayne side of it, I'm not sure you could find a classier person in how he handled himself start to finish. Let's not forget he never called a game before. You know, the only game, quote unquote, that he called was like a skills competition and a Rising Stars challenge in the All-Star Weekend format. So he had never called a real game until our first game, which was France-Brazil, and Victor Wembanyama running out on the court, chucking up a shot from half court in front of 30,000 fans who are patiently waiting or impatiently waiting for him to get on the floor an hour before tip-off and drilling a half-court shot. That was his first experience sitting in the chair before a game, and he goes, is this what it's like? I'm like, not always, all right? Not always. This is not – don't get used to this. This is not normal. And I think he embraced that part of it. And obviously, you mentioned it, the experience he had as a player was massive. And he drew on that certainly as an Olympic player, as someone who played with USA basketball and outside competitions as well. But his wealth of knowledge for the game was on full display. His willingness to have fun was on full display. And more than anything, what I hope people took away from him doing it was how much effort he put into it. And he really did. Before we ever got there, he was literally working with a vocal coach to learn how to pronounce European names properly. You know, that's just going above and beyond. And his whole mentality was, well, I had coaches when I was a player, you know, when I wanted to improve my jump shot or I wanted to have a better handle or if I wanted to become stronger, I had somebody as a trainer or an athletic performance coach or a skills coach. I said, why wouldn't I do the same thing as a broadcaster and rely on all the people around me and try to learn? And so he was, as a result, incredibly coachable. He listened to whatever we had to tell him and anything that we heard. But more than anything, he remained himself, which is the most important. You know this. I mean, if anybody who's in this knows that if you want to be successful, you have to be you. You can't try to be anybody else. And I thought he did that. But yeah, I think once it was over and I really took the step back and appreciated the 3 weeks that we were there and appreciated the 2-week run of games where it was, 22 games over the course of 14 days, 17 different teams. That's not quite a normal assignment. So to really step back and say, okay, we did that and we did it well, and we got really lucky with some incredible games, some games that maybe I will never match over the course of my hopefully long broadcasting career. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. One more like Dwayne specific question, then I do want to know like a little bit more about the prep that goes into calling the Olympics, especially when you're doing the men's and the women's, as you were. You have all these players, like many players that you cover as you're doing Nets games in the NBA, and you did Clippers games for a number of years, but a lot that you didn't. So we can talk about that in a second. But that coachability from Dwayne, there's because it can go, like I've done this long enough as well, like it can go one of two ways with athletes. Athletes either think they know how to do it and they don't want any feedback, or they're like, I've been coached my career, coach me up. Correct. And then I know that you guys also were able to have like all these moments you guys were posting from going to dinner together and all those kinds of things. Like how did building that human connection with him and those moments help the broadcast ultimately in what we saw unfold over 2 weeks of you guys calling games together?
No, it's massive, because I mean, that's what the question I think people ask me the most is, well, how do you develop chemistry with somebody quickly? And it's really not a difficult formula. The formula is you develop a friendship with that person, a genuine friendship with that person. And even if you're not best friends, it's a taking a genuine interest in the person that you're working with and listening and responding and being willing to talk about things, whatever it might be, that are completely unrelated to the games that you're covering. That's important. In fact, that's imperative, in my opinion, to have success as a teammate. And so Dwayne was perfect for that. I mean, the best example of that was week one. We were in Lille, which was 2.5 hour drive from Paris, maybe even three and a half. If you got stuck in the traffic, we did go in there. And we were staying in, I would say, you know, a very okay hotel. It wasn't the nicest accommodation you'll ever see. And Dwayne Wade, who was in the Hall of Fame and has made a whole lot of money, could have easily said, I'm going to go find better accommodations for myself. I'm going to stay in my own area. But he chose to stay with us the entire time. He stayed across the hall from me. I would say he said it was probably the lowest quality hotel room he had stayed in since his college days, maybe, or maybe even since his high school days. But he did it because he wanted to be a part of the team. And we had explained to him beforehand, hey, this is like a locker room. You know, this is like your locker room. This is the closest thing you're going to feel to your locker room. And we're going to roast each other, and we're going to hang out with each other, and we're going to poke fun at things that are happening, and we're going to create real memories. And then that's going to ooze itself on screen. And that's really what happened. You know, everything that we were doing was real. And then it just kind of was a continuation. You know, my stats guy, Tyler Freed, said, don't say anything that you don't want getting on the air, off the air, because anything's fair game at this point. And for us, it really was. We would be talking about something on the ride over. The first day, I remember we were doing that Brazil game. It was Brazil and France. And Cristiano Felicio was on the Brazilian team. And I'm like, Dwayne, you played with him in Chicago. And he's like, yeah, he stole a triple-double from me. First thing you said. I'm like, what? And he goes into this whole thing of how he stole this triple-double and he yelled at him. He's like, come on, man, you got to be smarter than that. And he's like, I didn't have many of those left. I was at the end of my career at that point. We talked about it for 5 minutes. So the first thing he checks in, and out of nowhere, I just hear Dwayne go, it was a cold night in Chicago. And I'm like, okay, I know where this is going now. And it was a whole back and forth. And it was great. So that stuff is really important, because if you don't have it, you can still do good broadcasts. It just takes it to a different level.
And then was the crew you're working with, you mentioned that team, was it mostly the same crew outside of your analyst and your sideline reporter? Like, is the same people producing the men's and the women's games? And then you're, you know, Dwayne, and then you obviously have LaChina, who's incredible as your analyst on the women's side. I think it was Zora and then KB, your two sideline reporters, Kareth Burke. Is it other than that, the same crew? So you're all just kind of one big team, or were you kind of bouncing between two different teams?
No, it was all the same. The one thing for this particular assignment was the main production crew, producer and director and graphics, et cetera, they were back in Connecticut for it. So it was a little different than, you know, what in theory and normal, if you're doing the NBA and you're a top crew, you're going to have your entire crew there. This, because it's the Olympics and it's such a massive, massive undertaking, they've done a lot out of Stanford. There's only three sports, I believe, they travel their entire production crews for at this point. And it's the big three Olympic sports: track, swimming, and gymnastics. So for us, that was a little bit of a challenge, certainly having Dwayne. But one thing that NBC did that was smart, they sent a longtime seasoned producer, someone who's real good at the job, David Gibson, with us. And he was basically at the table with us. He had direct contact to both Dwayne and my headsets during the broadcast. And he was really there to make sure that Dwayne was comfortable, to make him understand, and also to give him some of those pointers that he saw throughout. So that was huge to have almost a conduit from him going back and forth with the truck back in Connecticut. But no, for us, yeah, it was, they were there, they were with us. So it was a nice continuity feel and familiarity. And then on top of that, everybody in terms of a technical crew that we had was with us essentially from start to finish. And then you mentioned Kareth week one, Zora week two. LaChina is incredible. I mean, you know LaChina, and she's not only an incredible broadcaster, incredible basketball mind, but an even more incredible person. And so to have her, for me, it was like having an elite tight end, just a perfect dump it down. You know exactly what you're going to get. And she delivered every single time. So that was easy for me.
No doubt about it. Noah Eagle, NBC Sports with us here on the Hoffman Show. He's got the call Friday, Packers and Eagles. Talk about that in just a few minutes, but recapping a little bit of his summer spent over in France, calling the basketball. And then, by the way, people are like, oh, he's probably rested until football. No, he's been calling a Chargers preseason, jumped right back into it. So been all over the place. Lots of airline miles, lots of time zones. He barely knows where he is, but he's doing this interview and he's doing a great job. So when it comes to learning that many names, and as like, if I had learned that my broadcast partner was having a vocal coach to learn the European names, I'd be like, can I get in on those sessions? Because there's a lot of learning and a lot of languages that aren't comfortable to the English speaking tongue. If you got to learn like the Greek names and stuff like that. Yeah. So what is the process of preparing? And then I would also be curious, especially because you did both the men's and the women's, like LaChina's knowledge of the women's game is so vast. Like, Do you lean on her? Do you just follow the same process, men's and women's? What was it like to, and how long did it take? Like, how long ago did you start preparing for that element of it?
Yeah, I mean, the preparation side was difficult on, because I in theory, I was like, okay, you know what? I did the French Open, and that ended second week of June. And so I knew I had from the second week of June until the third week of July, essentially, until that's when I was leaving for the Olympics. I said, okay, I've got 5 weeks, let's say, here to regroup and then potentially try to get ahead. And I was doing things in the middle of that. I had little things that were taking me away. So it's not like I was totally free all the time, but I knew I had pockets of time. That was probably the most amount of uninterrupted time I was going to have. So I'm like, okay, how much can I get done? The problem is, the rosters weren't released. The only rosters we knew were the two American rosters. And so I was like, all right, at least I'll get these American ones done. But those aren't the ones I really need to learn. Even the U.S. Right. women, we know all those players. You know, they're stars. Every single one of them is an absolute.
You probably called a couple of them while you were in school.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So, and even if I hadn't, you know, I did the 3x3 a couple years ago. Jackie Young, Kelsey Plum both played 3x3 in Tokyo. So you have that institutional knowledge. And I was glad that a couple of the other 3x3 players from Tokyo were on the 5-on-5 teams, non-US now, which is nice. So you at least have a little bit, you know, on Mai Yamamoto, who I don't know, I probably wouldn't have known much about Mai Yamamoto if I hadn't done 3x3 in Tokyo. So things like that. But yeah, just to give you a sense of when the rosters were official, because I had to almost hedge my bets and hope I was correct. And there were a couple of teams that I was very much incorrect on who they were bringing. They didn't give us the rosters officially until the day before the competition started. Yeah. So a lot of them, you know, a lot of them I got pretty good. And even if it was one or two players that I included one person and they decided to bring somebody else, I could switch that. But there were a couple teams that I tried to do and I got 6 incorrect, 7 incorrect because they was completely listed differently online. That was a challenge. But yeah, the first day, so we do that Brazil-France. Our second game, we did a doubleheader. Dwayne's first day ever calling games. We did Brazil-France and then we did Canada and Greece. And I was like, if he is going to be good at this, this is the perfect way to find out because this is going to be a challenge. And if he's willing to accept this challenge, we know what he's all about. And he was all in on it. He was practicing. He made sure he got every single one of those correct. So yeah, those were different. You had to go definitely digging a little bit more. You know, the NBA, WNBA players, you can find information about them like that. There's so much information available now about those players. But the ones that have never played in the NBA or the WNBA, especially on the women's side, there is not that abundance necessarily that you're accustomed to at the professional level. You really have to go digging. And so for me, I've always been of the belief, okay, I'll exhaust every option. You know, you look online, you look for articles first. That's always the first thing you're looking for. You look for bio and background information, whatever. That's great. Second thing I go to then is YouTube. Type the name in, see if you can get any kind of interviews that they have done. And then the next thing I'll look at is social media. Do they have an Instagram page that I can find something that can at least give me a hint? You know, I feel like an investigative reporter sometimes, yep. or some kind of just someone who's trying to crack a crime. You know, like, I don't know what I'm doing, but you just try to find a clue, something that can put you on the right scent. So I did a lot of that, especially for the women's players on the non-US teams. And then, you know, we got lucky late. The Australian team, a ton of WNBA, their current or former players. Obviously, France and Gabby Williams was the head of the snake, but even Marine Johannes. We know those players. And even some of their younger players, like, we know a lot of those players. But teams like Nigeria, that it's an expanded and maybe the top two or three, great. Alexis Peterson playing for Germany was awesome. You know, I see that. I see a Syracuse connection somehow. I'm like, this is great. And obviously Satu was huge for them. But yeah, it was a process, and you really had to dig and you really had to put in the effort, which I did. And I was happy with how it all came out. I really focused on whatever the day I was doing was what I focused on. So basically I got there. I had 4 days or so before the competitions really started. Those 4 days, everyone's like, oh, what'd you do? You know, you're exploring Paris. I'm like, no. I was in my hotel room and I was studying for all these teams. So I got
it. I can vouch for that, by the way. This man was working. I was trying to hang out with my friend in Paris, and he's like, I am slammed, bro.
Yeah, there was no chance. And I felt terrible. Like, a couple people reached out, yourself included. I'm like, look, man, I really wish I could.
But yeah.
It's a daily thing. And we had games every day from that point on. So to answer the second part with the China, yeah, her knowledge of the women's game is so vast and so impressive. I definitely was relying on her. You know, I did a lot of research on the teams and the players that we had. And, you know, I feel like I was pretty good in terms of recent knowledge, especially of the W and certainly of the college games, probably in the last 5+ years. But I really needed the historical stuff, which I knew she was going to have. So I did a lot of research on historical stuff just so I had it in case. But I knew that if I was in a pinch and I wasn't 100% sure, I could basically pass it to her and let her go. And there were moments where that happened, and I was more than happy for that to be the case because I knew she was going to deliver, and she did every time. So it was great. She was a joy. Dwayne was a joy. Our whole team was great. And once I learned all the teams and learned how to say the names, we just called ball and we let the rest take care of itself.
So for a TV play-by-play guy, there's two huge things you got to do. You got to set up your analysts great, and you got to nail the big moments. And lo and behold, you wind up with a huge moment in both gold medal games, the Curry Dagger 3, which sent me absolutely cackling as I was watching in French, because we were still in Paris. That was the last night we were there. And just their version of the call was hilarious. And then you have the moment where Gabby Williams' foot is on the line, and you have to like process that in real time, which, by the way, I haven't told you this. I was watching that game on the plane. The VPN worked on. I watched you and LaChina call that game somewhere over Canada as we had gone like up and back down towards, we were flying into Charlotte and then had to connect. So got to a point where the satellite internet was working well enough to stream the old Peacock app. Love that.
Yo, that's crazy. I don't know how Peacock tracked that in terms of viewership, but whatever it is,
plus
we
one.
Appreciate you, Big Dog.
Yeah, you're so welcome. You. So how do you, like, with the high, I'm sure you've gone back and watched the calls, like, is that almost like an out-of-body experience, moments like that, that you know, and especially like the Curry one, you know you're calling something that's going to last forever. That's a moment that's going to be in every highlight reel for USA basketball for the next 100 years. Like, does that hit you in the moment later? Like, what's that like?
Definitely not in the moment.
Does it hit you right now?
Yeah, definitely not in the moment, especially because I knew I had two women's games the next day, and not just the next day, but starting at 11 a.m. And so that game, after all the ceremony and everything, I didn't get back to my hotel room until 12:30. And now I'm like, I got to prepare for two straight games tomorrow. And, you know, I think I knew it was big because my phone was definitely blowing up from it. And so that signaled how many people were watching. But I didn't really look at it in historical context. Now, I will say this, in terms of the calls themselves and in terms of the moment itself, I had done enough Steph Curry games as an opponent, certainly different when you're an opponent. And this was the first time I really got to experience it and the jubilation that comes with one of those Steph heat checks. But I had done enough of these to know there's one more coming. You know, there's one more coming. There's another one that's going to, you know. So you do know that you have to still have another level. Mm. And so I took the chance in keeping something late. Now, people have asked, did you come up with the golden dagger ahead of time? I did not. I came up with that in the start of that possession, basically. Anything that I said, none of that was pre-planned. It's impossible, in my opinion, to truly pre-plan any of that stuff. You got to let the game come to you, let the game dictate how you're going to say it. And Steph obviously provided the moments. And now our job is really just don't mess it up, man. Don't mess up this moment. Don't jump on this somehow. Get out of the way when you need to get out of the way. But just if you can add something, great. If not, then just don't try to do too much. And I felt like that's what we did, is we really just reacted very genuinely, very naturally. And so we got fortunate that people seemed to respond. It is funny how quickly things can change, because in the Serbia game, when the U.S. is down 17 in the third quarter, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, wow, you know, Dwayne and I have really, everyone seemed to really like what we've said. The China and I, people have really enjoyed kind of our broadcast so far. We've been really lucky to have a very positive reaction. But if the U.S. loses, and I'm on the call for this, and Dwayne's on the call for this, we go from being, you know, somewhat of darlings to absolutely universally hated. And every time we pop up on screen, it's like, ah, those guys, they're on the failure. Failure. Like, I'm like, that's what I'm thinking, right? And then the polar opposite, where obviously they win that game and everyone's like, this was awesome. And then they win the gold medal game and everyone's like, this is awesome. And then the women, same feeling now is happening, because when France is battling with them, I'm like, this is getting tight. And I'm looking at LaChina and she's like, this is getting tight. And we're like, is this going to go the right way? Is like, because look, obviously, they were the more talented team in terms of just overall depth, but it's not like France wasn't talented. I mean, obviously, their top players are their top players, and we know what they're capable of. And Gabby Williams came alive in the second half in particular. But at the same time, the U.S. was also going for 8 straight golds. And I don't think we were giving, not necessarily us, but we as a country were giving enough credit to how difficult that actually is, because of how dominant they have been for so long. So in that moment, we're kind of having that same thought of, what are we going to say if they lose here? Like, how are we going to frame that? And then obviously Kalia Copper just comes up huge, massive buckets in the second half and down the stretch in the fourth quarter. Big plays from her, big plays from Asia. She hits the free throws Copper does in the last couple seconds, whatever, 5 seconds left. And I just remember Johannes gets it up ahead for Williams, and I was pretty certain that the foot was on the line. But that's to your point. It's a decision you have to make in the moment. Do you wait on it or do you just say it? And I was at a certain percentage of confidence. Let's say I was 90% confident. I said, okay, I got to take the risk. It's a risk that's going to be worth the reward if I'm correct. And I felt good. But LaChina, right after I think we finished the broadcast, she goes, thank God you were right. I was like, I know. She goes, I couldn't see it. I couldn't see if it was on the line or not. And our producer, the on-site producer, David Gibson's like, I didn't see it either. Thank God you were right. I'm like, I got lucky. You know what I mean? I just took the risk. And fortunately, I was correct. But man, both of those finishes were insane. And when I talked to my dad afterward, he said, I really hope you enjoyed those. I was like, they were incredible. They were some of the best games I've ever called. He goes, you're right. And you could call games for 40 more years and they might be the best games you ever call. So I hope you enjoyed them. And I was like, yeah, I did.
So by the way, speaking of your dad, I did want to ask one question where your dad is going to be a part of it. But I will also tell you, you know what else I watched on the plane was, because I'm me and I have the job that I have, I had to watch the Commanders preseason game to be ready for my show the next day, which on NFL Game Pass was the Jets broadcast. And thus I switched from you to your dad.
Let's go.
And watch, went from gold medal thrill loyal to Jets Commanders preseason week one. Let's go. Let's go. The reason I was going to bring up your dad is not necessarily specific to you, but if I met a broadcaster and was like, wow, you have all of these wide array of games you have to call in terms of scope. You mentioned your last assignment before you lock into basketball is the French Open. You come back, you're doing the NFL. And if I met someone who was younger than me and I was like, you know who you need to meet to prepare for this, it's Ian Eagle, because your dad, you know, and booking him for radio shows over the years, I'm always like, oh, right, you have Nets and Thursday Night Football and CBS Sundays.
Yeah.
And he's also obviously called so many games of a high magnitude. So I'm curious the advice you got from him. And if there's anybody else that's not your dad that you lean on that has similar experiences. I mean, Tirico's obviously there and part of the NBC family. I'd imagine he's a name that might come up as well as the Syracuse connections. I'm sure you've known him for a long time. But like, your dad's the obvious one. I'm not going to discredit your dad because I also love your father. but I'm curious if you have any non-Ian Eagle mentors that you don't get to shout out maybe quite as often that are also really important to you to prepare for both the scope and the magnitude of the assignments that you've been able to take on recently.
Yeah. I mean, so the first part is just watching him and kind of how he handles everything. It's a similar mentality to what I was talking about with how I handled the overall Olympic assignment, which is you focus on the day that's you have right now, and then when it's time to shift to the next one, you shift to the next one. So yeah, it's all time management and budgeting, and you can try to get ahead, but you have to be present in the moment. And that was really what his biggest thing to me for that was going into that, is just remember to be present in the moment and enjoy the moment. On top of it, like, obviously go work your tail off, do well, call the games, but have fun and be present in that and take it the true one day at a time cliche that we hear about all the time. So 1,000%. Tirico is definitely high on that list. I'm glad you mentioned him. I mean, somebody who does everything to me at an elite level. And that's what I aspire to do, is doing everything at the elite level. You know, calling games as one of the best game callers, hosting as one of the best hosts, going out and doing a segment or whatever, and doing that at an elite level for sure. And he's always been great. And certainly since I've gotten NBC, you know, I've known him my whole life, but getting to NBC now and being teammates, every time I see him, we always have nice long chats, and he's always there to provide any kind of knowledge or advice on handling certain things. You know, I remember when I started doing the NFL with NBC last year, you know, I'd done a couple NFL games, but NBC does it a little differently with some of the meetings. And the one thing that Mike does, and I don't know if this was a Mike thing or this was like a Fred Godelli, who's an elite producer, some would say the greatest football producer ever, and is still heavily involved at NBC. I don't know who came up with it, but the play-by-play guy talks to the special teams coordinator during the week, and then the analyst talks to the offensive and defensive coordinator, and then everybody collectively together talks to the head coach, quarterback, and two stars. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. You know, that's different. I haven't heard of that before. So I called Mike and I was like, what is that? Like, what do you do for that? What do you get out of that? And he gave me a bunch of stuff. And sure enough, you know, I just did the Michigan game. I used a ton of that special team stuff. And Fresno State, I called their special teams coordinator. He tells me this whole background about how their punter is a 22-year-old true freshman from Australia who has never played an organized football game before. And his first ever organized football game was at the Big House in front of 110,000 people and the defending national champions. Like, that's stuff you don't get unless you do talk to the special teams coordinator. So that's cool. And so he's always there to provide kind of guidance and that type of stuff. But any of those people, I mean, Adam Amin has been great, and I love Adam. And I think Adam is an outstanding broadcaster as is, and is somebody who can always just be there to provide whatever it is. But it's really just, and you know this, all the people that you become friends with in the industry and you just have conversations with in the industry and you share experience with, I could go down a long laundry list of those where I'm just talking with them and we're exchanging things. We're not even meaning to do so. It's probably just organic conversation, but you might take bits and pieces from it and then run. And so that's friends, that's acquaintances, that's people you run into. But it's a small business and a large business all at once. And so I try to take advantage of that and keep building those relationships each week.
No doubt about it. Very, very well put and very, very true. And Adam Amin, yeah, I don't know about that guy. Very questionable character, that Adam Amin.
Top tier hugger, man. Top tier hugger.
Yes. Oh, that A+ note on that. A plus note. All right. Last thing for Noah Eagle here. The actual reason, in theory, they were having him on. The real reason is I wanted to have this conversation with Noah because I've been wanting to ask him all this stuff, and I thought it'd be really interesting for the audience. And so we got all the background of the summer and everything out of the way. Next up, Packers Eagles Friday night on Peacock, 7 p.m. The coverage begins. Week one is beautiful, Noah, because we have no idea what is going to happen. Week one is terrible for broadcasters, Noah, because we have no idea what is going to happen. So as you prepare for this one, like, what is your top storyline going into it? If you want to give one each team, or if you just like, if there's one more overarching one that crosses, you know, sideline to sideline, what is the big thing that you think is the storyline to watch that you'll be tracking and kind of keeping the audience updated on throughout this one beyond whatever plays out on the field?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the overarching storyline for our game is that it's an elite matchup between two teams that believe they can win a Super Bowl this year. And so how do you start a season with expectations of, hey, we need to go out there and compete for the ultimate prize? And both teams certainly have the personnel, the coaching, and et cetera to do that. And I think that Nick Sirianni is trying to prove, no, I do belong in that elite coaching conversation, despite what happened in the second half of last year. And the Eagles are looking to put that behind them. The main storyline on top of that is the fact that there's an NFL game in Brazil. It's the first time that's ever happening. And so we're going to really highlight that and showcase what it looks like over there. NFL has told us that those tickets sold out very quickly. And so the intrigue in the game is massive. The fandom in Brazil, I didn't realize how much it was growing. They say they have about 36 million fans in that country right now, which is incredible down in South America. But to just go kind of scope on each team, Eagles have reloaded. You know, you lose some all-time players, and certainly Jason Kelce at the forefront of that, but you retool in an offensive line that's still arguably the best in the NFL. A defense that now has young studs on top of the veterans that they bring back on all three levels. Saquon Barkley coming over in division, like, that doesn't happen very often. Now you have Jahan Dotson, as you guys well know, coming over in division. Again, that doesn't happen all that often. So offensively, they've got as many weapons as anybody. These are two of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. And Jalen Hurts, this is a big time prove it year in many respects. This is a guy that was fighting for the MVP 2 years ago, was nearly a Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP. And instead, within 2 years, he's gone from highest paid player and near MVP to, is he really the guy we thought he is and was? I think that it's still very much in there with him. And this is the start of him trying to provide that for the rest of the league. On the other side, Green Bay was one of the great storylines of the NFL last year, and Jordan Love and his ascension was one of the great storylines of the NFL last year. But there's a difference between being the hunters and the hunted, and they're going to shift to being the hunted now. How do you handle that? And that's what I'm looking for out of them. I think we know LaFleur has been probably one of the more underrated coaches in the league now for years. I think that he's proven himself to be an upper echelon coach. They win every single year. And even 2 years ago when they just barely missed the playoffs, given the injuries that they dealt with, given the inexperience that they had around that roster, the fact that they were in the playoff hunt to start was pretty remarkable. Now you've got Jordan Love ascending to, now he's the highest paid quarterback in NFL history, which happens with each new deal. So I hate saying that because it feels like every time you say one, someone else takes the mantle. You bring in Josh Jacobs. So both these teams have star running backs now. And on top of that, I find the receiving core with Green Bay fascinating because they don't necessarily have a guy, right? Like, you don't have your 1A in theory, but you have a bunch of really good guys. And honestly, sometimes that can be even more dangerous. It's a pick your poison. They've got two good tight ends. They've got a line that I think it's going to have to prove that they are ready to be a Super Bowl winning type offensive line, but a defense that's littered with talent and a defense that should be really difficult to face. It's a team that has all the pieces, but how do you handle being shifted from hunter to hunted? And I think that's what we're going to get to see right out of the gates here week one, because that Philadelphia side, they've got a lot more to prove than they did a year ago.
No doubt about it. Yeah, the Love trajectory, is it going to be what Jalen went through? And a year from now, are we like, why did they give Jordan Love that deal, or is he actually this good? I think it's probably that one, but yeah. Fantasy owners everywhere hating the Green Bay receiving core, football analysts everywhere loving it. There's so much to watch, and it'll all be with Noah on the call Friday night on Peacock. Really appreciate you, dude. Thanks so much for being so generous with your time, and I'll catch you at some point later in the season, or perhaps when you come to town in the spring for the most vaunted assignment on your schedule, Wizards Nets.
You know I'm ready, man. You know I'm always ready for the Wiz. I saw a lot of Bilal Coulibaly, so it'll be time when the time is right. But Craig, appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
As they say in France, allez!
Hey, this is DA, and you're listening to The Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.